heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
How soon do you think before President Trump took office that he decided that he was going to use Twitter to speak to the American people? It obviously happened somewhere during the campaign. And I'm sure the light bulb went off in his mind when he thought, you know, how am I going to do this? How am I going to wrestle these lions and tigers to the ground, or these jackasses and elephants in this case, right, to the ground and make this thing happen, you know? As we always say, rock the canoe. How's he going to do that? And I'm sure at some point he said to himself, I'm going to have to speak directly to the American people, and I'll use Twitter. I don't see any other way it could have been. I mean, it's not like anybody sat him down and said, this is the protocol, Mr. President. This is how we communicate with the American people. You use the Twitter account. That never happened before. This president has single-handedly changed the game of politics in America. And I'm not sure we can ever go back again. I don't know that we can ever see a future president not talking directly to the American people. So this changed everything. It changed the relationship with the Fourth Estate, with the media, their role in all of this. They're no longer the first to report news anymore. The news is first reported on the Twitter account. But it's pretty clear the president has used this media like nobody's business. And some of the tweets, I mean, they, as I was talking about there to you this over the weekend on Viewpoint, some of the tweets can sting, but there's psychology behind it. You know, a lot's happened since November 8th, 2016. You know, that seems like a lifetime ago, doesn't it to you? I mean, it does to me. It seems like a long time ago. And it seems longer than it should be because it's been dragged out from these scandals and this constant drumbeat and of attack the president, bring the president down. Really, it's unprecedented in American politics to have anything like this. This is also historical, which actually makes the Twitter feed even that much more important. Because if he wasn't talking to people directly, he didn't have that feed, I mean, all bets would probably be off, people. So it was November 8, 2016. That was the big day, that election that the president surprised everybody. Not himself. I don't think he surprised himself. I think he knew what he was doing all the way through. But there is a surreal moment in there, and I think he even admitted that a little bit later when he got into the Oval Office. In that moment, I think every president probably goes through that when they step into this historical house, the White House, and you get into that Oval Office, and I think just about every one of them has pinched themselves to think, wow, I've arrived. You know, there's only been, he's number 45. It's a select club for sure. But today, friends, it's really about the change in landscape of politics in America and President Trump's influence on all of that. You know, you remember back to just a few days after the election in 2016. It was actually pretty close. I think it was about the 10th or so. And he met in Washington with Paul Ryan. Of course, the Vice President-elect Mike Pence was there, and First Lady, future First Lady at that time, Melania Trump. And they ate lunch at the Capitol Hill Club, you may recall. And when they went to the Speaker's office for that big meeting, now remember, he didn't have a good relationship with Paul Ryan through the campaign at all. And Paul Ryan, even though he was a senior Republican politician, he hardly ever mentioned Trump's name. And when he did, it wasn't delivered with affection or trust, or I don't think there was any love lost between the two. Well, Ryan, he's part of a different club. We'll talk about that more in a minute, but that political elite club, he's part of that. You could say the Mitt Romney club, but there's a whole host of them. They look at Trump as a clear threat to their existence. I remember the scene on the balcony. You may recall that. That's like etched in my mind, where Paul Ryan was on the balcony, and there was this feeling of the country that things were changing rapidly now. You know, the country had been through, well, 8 long years of Barack Obama and his policies to socialize America. And that was after, you know, Bush, which wasn't far off of another level of socialism as well, really. Big government in control of your life, you know. And I remember the scene where Paul Ryan was out. He has a balcony in his Capitol office there. And you remember the scene where he was on there and he was pointing over in the distance there? And it was, he was pointing out different things and landmarks. And also where we found out later on that he was pointing where the Trump Hotel was, which was very controversial because, you know, they've continued to point that out to him, that the president shouldn't own a hotel down the road. But I remember Ryan just pointing out things in Washington. So here was this outsider. And now he doesn't even really know the geography there, where things are located, you know. And so Paul Ryan's pointing all this out from his beautiful balcony in the Capitol office, you know, overlooks the Washington Monument there. You remember the scene. I mean, I remember it clearly like it was yesterday. And as he was talking to who would be number 45. This was still well before he would be sworn in January. But it was an interesting telltale sign of what was to come, people. I think that particular moment right there. Paul Ryan went on to say a lot of things about the president, okay? And he never really seen eye to eye. In fact, that's why you've seen the speaker leave. I mean, he retired as a pretty young man from the House of Representatives. As a senior, most senior Republican there. I mean, that doesn't normally happen like that with a young guy to leave office that quick. But see, he didn't know how to handle a President Trump. That was clear through the whole campaign, and it was very apparent there. If you go back and you look at a lot of the photographs, and you study those photographs of Paul Ryan and Donald Trump, they tell a really interesting story. Just look at the body language of the photographs. I've done it. They tell a very interesting story. You can actually read Paul Ryan's mind as he looks at the president, as he looks at his lips moving, or he's talking in videos or pictures. And you can see his distrust for number 45. Tells me a lot, actually. He Paul Ryan was part of that elite club in Washington. You know, both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats. Many people refer to this as the deep state as well, but these are the people who really control the power strings in Washington. It's really the elite club. It's a club that only they belong to. That's why they got things like the Hush Fund and others to protect both political parties, because both political parties are pretty corrupt. The president knew this. I mean, he clearly knew when he was going in that he was, I mean, he knew. He was biting off a lot. And this was going to be a monumental leap for him. And I think he must have realized to himself that he had nothing to lose. In all those years, he had talked about fixing Washington. And with his thoughts and ideas about the bad trade deals and the illegal immigration and all the things he pointed out over really 30 years, now were coming to fruition, that it would be his time to serve the American people. And how would he exactly do that? Would he fall into those comfortable coffers of the elite up there and become part of that club? They almost all do, even though they preach a story to the people. And the American people really didn't know at that point. I mean, they had hope that Trump was a different kind of guy, but people, truth be told, I mean, any of these politicians, they oftentimes look different through the campaign. But when it comes to that rubber meet in the road, things can change very rapidly with a president, and they hardly ever fulfill the campaign promises. They ever do any of that. So there really was an uncertainty. We really didn't know what to think of with Trump. Would he be the exception? Now, I think if you ask people that now, a lot of his followers, a lot of the MAGA community would say, oh yeah, we always knew that. They had hoped that would be the case, but they really didn't know. Because we've never had a politician do that. People would say to me again and point out, well, he's not a politician, Malcolm. Well, it's true. It's very true. But he certainly reached for that job and became a different kind of politician, I guess. I know he hates that word as much as I hate saying it. He hates hearing it. I'm certain of that as well. Because you can see him when that comes up all the time and he kind of cringes at that. But so from that initial moment, it was very clear that President Trump was going to be a different character, a different president. Number 45 was not going to be like number 44, 43, 42, 41, or probably anyone else for that matter. And so I suggest to you today that although, you know, the Twitter feed, I think, changed the whole story, it really was the goal of what President Trump was set up for, what he planned to do in Washington, and what he must have thought to himself, like, what could he really change in this system? I mean, we all know that the system has been busted for a long time. I mean, it's completely broke. The question became, could Donald Trump change that broken system? What could he do with it exactly? And how would that change our nation? Well, his Twitter feed again, let's go right to the Twitter feed and let's just analyze some of these tweets a moment. And the president says here, last month, all you heard from the radical left, do nothing Democrats, was ventilators, ventilators, ventilators. They screamed it loud and clear and thought they had us cold, even though it was the state's task. But everyone got their ventilators with many to spare. Now they scream, dot, dot, dot. Testing, testing, testing. Again, playing a very dangerous political game. States, not the federal government, should be doing the testing. But we will work with the governors and get it done. This is easy compared to the fast production of thousands of complex ventilators. What's interesting about those two tweets, and they absolutely tell a story, because he's exactly right. The ventilators and all the testing is really the responsibility of the states and the governors. So why did the governors drop the ball? They all had the opportunity to order those ventilators, people. They had opportunity all the way through the Obama administration before then and even the early days of the Trump administration. They had every opportunity. And there are many, many stories on that right now, how many of them, these governors, passed on that chance and opportunity to order the ventilators, get them in and have them in case. And the reason is because nobody, none of these governors, mayors, none of these people, leaders, expected that there was going to be a pandemic coming from China. So it was a crapshoot. They took a chance. So instead of spending hard-earned money that they're trying to, you know, get the job done and squeeze out every possible positive outcome they can, they elected and said, we're not going to get the ventilators or prepare for a pandemic because this had never happened in their lifetime. They'd never seen anything like this. Nobody had. So then why, you ask, well, why are they pinning it on the president? See, and that's really where politics now come in. Because this president also would have had no knowledge that we'd been hit with a massive pandemic of this nature. I mean, he couldn't have known this. Nobody knew this. It had never happened before. I mean, none of us were really back here in 1917, 18, 19. We weren't here. So we really didn't know, other than the historical records of what had happened. And that was a long time ago. And could that happen again? A lot of people would think, no, probably would never happen again. So then you say, how unfair is that? Well, it's very unfair. Then they point that at the president and say, well, it's your responsibility, Mr. President. And the real gumption here is these governors and the states like Cuomo and Newsom and so many others. And you have to give credit and kudos to the president. I have got to do that because he has really bridged the gap with relationships with these state governors in a way that I didn't think he would be able to do, quite frankly. The ideological difference between a Newsom and a Cuomo and a Trump, need I say any more? So I don't know about you, but I had no confidence that the president was going to have any kind of a working relationship with these governors. But yet he did. And he's done it. And he's had an incredible working relationship. I mean, everybody should be quite proud of that. And, you know, we talk about uniting the country and bridging the divide. Friends, I would suggest to you right now that this president has done that. 100% he's done that. I mean, he has united the country in that way. If you look at the conversations he has talked about when it comes to the relationships of the governors, and like he says here in that other tweet here, but we will work with the governors and get it done. And you see, that's a CEO mentality. I mean, I get that. I understand it, having been a CEO for a lot of my life. I understand what that means because the buck stops with the CEO. And he knows he's got to get it done. And the president is the CEO of the nation. That's exactly who he is. And so we understand that as a thinking. And so people say, well, a businessman shouldn't run for politics. Fact is, Paul Ryan come out with that many times and said, the president knows nothing about government. He would laugh about it and ridicule the president, actually, and candidate Trump, saying he knew nothing about government. There are all kinds of stories. Just look them up, and you'll see what I mean. That he really ridiculed the president, that he wasn't some expert in government affairs. You weren't a career politician. Remember, the president had never run for political office before either. That would make him certainly an anomaly to the system, wouldn't it now? We've never seen that before. Imagine one day waking up and deciding you're going to run for president and never run for political office before. They would just laugh you right off the edge, people. Ain't going to happen. And you think you're going to win? I mean, we are really fortunate and living in some incredible times. And I really see that. I've grown to really come to understand and respect this man and what he has taken on is truly remarkable to me. It should be remarkable to you. But in analyzing those two tweets on ventilators and testing, the president didn't complain. He didn't bitch. He didn't say anything again. He said, we'll work with the governors and get it done. And he lays out very well, it was the responsibility of the states, not the federal government. The federal government they're not the wherewithal. They don't have every answer. That's not their role. That's not their job. I mean, oftentimes a lot of people want big government to be really big like that, to have control of everything. That's what a lot of the establishment really wants Washington to be. That's what they envision the Orwellian world. That's what a lot of these people live for. I mean, 1984 wasn't a fairy tale to these people. It was a landmark dream moment they were trying to achieve. I believe that. And I think a lot of them have spent a career trying to make that happen. And we've become more Orwellian as we've gone on, you know. Another tweet the president puts out there, and you might remember this one. He's watching a sports game with a bunch of players. He's in the room there, remember. This is the commercial on Joe Biden, you know, and he's got Biden playing on the television. It's a very politically incorrect video, and certainly not one the president would normally put on his feed, which makes it even that much more valuable, the fact that he has. Because, again, this is where the president, I think, is pretty brilliant, because it tells a story. I mean, You wouldn't think back, you couldn't see any other president probably doing this, but this president doesn't think anything of it. He puts it out there. It's a socially, culturally interesting talking point, you know, where he's around, again, guys are in the rooms, they're watching the Biden commercial. I learned about roaches. I learned about kids jumping on my lap. Remember that? And the hair stands up and all of that stuff. And it sounds like a pretty perverted message. And then Obama is there. They've got one of the guys sitting down with Obama's face on. And everybody looks, all the players in the room look at Obama. And he just looks at him and says, what? As the Biden message comes up on the screen, you know, Biden 2020. Yeah. Well, again, there's a whole history of that. So the reason Trump would put that on there and find it interesting, because it is a cultural phenomenon. All of the history of Biden and women. I mean, you know, the left has made a history out of pointing that out about the unfairly treated women or sexual abuse or, you know, the Me Too movement, all of that. Well, Joe Biden could certainly be the poster child for that, people, right? So the president doesn't hesitate to put that out on the feed, which I think is, it's brazen. I think it's interesting. But it says something to all of us that, you know, the president's not afraid to poke back ever. And he takes it, I mean, I think he takes the real work seriously, but he's not afraid to point out what everybody, he says what people are thinking, but they're afraid to say. This president has no problem with, and I understand that fully. I get it. That's just the out loud truth. You put it out there. I mean, some people are not going to like it. He does a lot of retweets on the feed as well. And again, there's always something psychological about the retweets. Remember, he's retweeting somebody else. Like there was one, you remember last week, that said fire Fauci. And that was a big story because it was at the end of a tweet that he retweeted. So then the question was, well, does that mean the president is endorsing the point of firing Fauci? And that's where the retweets kind of can get you in trouble. But again, this president uses the Twitter feed to keep everybody honest, doesn't he now? You know, even the people on the task force, even the people in his circles he puts out there, you know, interesting. One of the interesting tweets at the very top, I have to tell you, is from Dan Crenshaw, Representative Crenshaw. And he did a video debunking the left's COVID-19 narrative. This is the pinned tweet, actually. So just imagine if you could be on the pinned tweet of the president of the United States at the very top there and be there. I don't know how long it'll be pinned for, but I'm sure he does that every so often. I notice there is a pinned tweet up there. Not always, but there are sometimes. And this is that one there. And it's an excellent video, but it gets into Dan Crenshaw debunking this whole left's narrative now that, you know, President Trump has fallen down on the job. I mean, it's the same narrative we hear all the time, which is really goes in the face of, you know, the president has done an extraordinary job on the top of the fact that they have kept him tied up and amused for 3.5 years with all their scandals. It's a wonder this president could get anything done, quite frankly. Yet he has. Amazing success and metrics for the American people. You know, there was a tweet just last day or two as well, where the president calls out Fox News. And this is interesting. I want to talk to you about this one a minute here. So this was with the GOP feed on Twitter. And the tweet says, today, Nancy Pelosi is appearing on Fox News Sunday. So this was on Sunday, sent this out, when the hashtag Paycheck Protection Program ran out of funding. She decided playing politics was more important than saving hashtag small biz. It is time for the Democrats to be held accountable for putting millions in financial limbo. And this is a very true statement, because we've got articles on America Out Loud about this, and people are upset. This is the small business engine of America, and she's trying to get all these pet projects in there right now, is what she's trying to do, as she did with the last bills. It's what she's always done. That's Pelosi calls it negotiating. She calls it negotiating, feeding all these pet projects in there for every promise she's given to somebody. I mean, she is the queen of that. She is brilliant at, that's how she's a multi millionaire gazillionaire many times over. You've seen the double stainless steel, absolutely gorgeous kitchen on the Corden show last week that got a lot of edgy controversy. Pretty stupid move for Pelosi, actually, eating all her chocolate and ice cream and bragging about it while people are suffering, waiting to try to get a damn check on up. You know, and she's holding up all the funds. Pretty sick, actually. And then you wonder, is she smart or is she stupid? Well, the president has been on a, I'll tell you right now what he says. You take that GOP tweet, the president retweets that and puts a comment at the top of that tweet. So it's a new tweet from him. He says, "Nervous Nancy is an inherently dumb person." So he's been calling her crazy, dumb, you know, stupid, evil. And the truth of it is she is all that. I mean, that's maybe not politically correct to say, many would say, but we all know that. The American people know this. So the president is just speaking our truth. I mean, when you really look at it that way, see, that's what makes this leader so different. Because he's willing to say what nobody else is going to say in the room. And I fully understand what that means. You know, as a young guy, I was criticized all the time for being the guy you didn't want to have in the committee or on the board in the room when you wanted the truth. I totally get Trump's philosophy here because it's the same way I've operated in my life. A lot of committees and a lot of board, they didn't want me in there because I would tell you the truth. I didn't sugarcoat it. I gave it to you straight. I gave you the out loud truth. And you may not like that. So I totally get where Trump is coming from. And for those that argue it's not presidential, you know what? I think we're way past those rules, people. I think it's way past, for the Paul Ryans in the world and the rest of the muckety-mucks out there who think this isn't really the proper way of a American leadership, a first-rate world leader, superpower country shouldn't be doing this. You know what? We're way past those rules, people. I mean, listen, the political elites in the deep state have been playing this game the way they've been playing the game. They have no right to dictate the rules now. They have no right to tell anybody, the president or we the people, what the rules of the game are now. I mean, maybe if the rules weren't so corrupt, maybe if they didn't break all the rules and play the game as they played it, maybe it would be a different story, people. Maybe we could have that conversation now about presidential. Well, many ways, this is a new brand of president. It's a new way of being presidential. It's called honesty. It's called the out loud truth. One day I'll talk to the president about that, the out loud truth, because I totally get that philosophy that's involved with. And that truth can hurt a lot of people. I mean, nobody really ever likes the truth. They like to camouflage and sugarcoat it. And that's why I'm sure Trump was the same one in those committee rooms and on those board meetings. He cut to the chase, bottom line kind of guy. I totally get it. So he says in this tweet on top of the GOP, "Nervous Nancy is an inherently dumb person. She wasted all of her time on the impeachment hoax. She will be overthrown, either by inside or out, just like her last time as speaker. Chris Wallace and Fox News are on a bad path. Watch!" Exclamation mark. Fox News on a bad path, the president says. I'll tell you why I agree with the president and why Fox News is on a bad path on the other side of the poise, people. And I think this is another interesting tweet that needs to be analyzed. And this is an important one, actually, for a lot of reasons, because of what's happened with the media and the Fourth Estate, you know. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. As we celebrate our 4-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. Well, shouldn't news deliver truth and inspire us to reach higher? With blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit HealthyCell.com/sleep. That's Healthy, HealthyCell.com/sleep.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
So he calls out Chris Wallace and Fox News in that last tweet. They're on a bad path. Watch! Exclamation mark. So that's a pretty big directive there, what the president has thrown out, and almost like he has some information or a perspective, an inside view, if you will, of what's happening or what's coming down. Here's the perspective the president has I'm going to give you now. You see, the president knows the American people. He knows we the people. He knows who we are. He knows that we're the kind of people that we want a good life. We want to do well. We want to do right. We don't want anything for nothing. We want our due. We're willing to pay our share, but we don't want to be screwed around and twisted ass backwards people either. He knows the American people. When he points out Fox News, you see, here's the whole thing about this news cycle and where Fox News is going. Fox right now, they are pissing on the cornflakes when it comes to conservatives more so, and Republicans generally. They are absolutely pissing on the cornflakes. They're picking up a lot of enemies. And a lot of people, you notice, have started to turn Fox News off. There's a lot of criticism out there about Fox News. Now, Fox News is in denial. They don't really know why. That's the truth. I don't think they because you see, I mean, and I get this conversation being in media now and having been in the corporate boardrooms and understand the semantics of business. I'm going to understand where they're coming from. So Fox News enters the arena seeing all of this corrupt media, right? I mean, they see how corrupt and off balance the media is. And they initially become this vision of a conservative voice. They open up a lot of conservatives. They become a magnet, more or less, for conservatism. There's many, kind of in the same way that America Out Loud has now. Because it's funny, because I started off a little differently than what Fox News did. I started off, you know, I've kind of reversed with Fox News, actually. Now that I think about it, I've actually changed positions with them. See, they started off with a conservative voice and thinking that, and they were a magnet, and all the conservatives just came to them, and they became this number one biggest outlet. Now, do the math, people. Why would they become the number one, biggest cable news, and everybody watched them? I mean, their brand grew, mega company, right? Fox News. And really, that came out of nowhere. And when you think of all the players they kind of took down, and then you get all of these left media players, all of the network televisions, all of the cable televisions, you know all the players. In all the news in general, it is what, 90-some-odd percent? The numbers are all over the place, but some say 95% tilted far to the left. Now, those numbers, in whatever measure they are, people, whether they're 90, 92, 95, or 97 on any given day, you hear those reports and studies out there. Let's just say they're one-sided. Yeah, would you agree with me there? They're one-sided. So now you've got all this heavy news on the far left here, okay? But then Fox News started this whole campaign of being fair and balanced. You see, they were being called out all the time. And I think they took it to their heart a bit, and they thought, we need to be fair and balanced. And they took on that mantra of fair and balanced. So what did that really mean? It means that they were going to rise above the crowd, and they thought they were going to rise above the partisan talk, and they were going to deliver a fair and balance. So they always had, the liberal voice in there, which is obviously what offended a lot of conservatives when they brought Donna Brazile on, who was so hated in conservative movements for what she did with the DNC and Hillary Clinton and the debates, and we all know that story, right? And yet Fox brings her right on, like in the middle of the day and in bright daylight, thinking like we're all going to embrace her. Well, no, Fox News had to know that she was like a cancer and would piss most of their audience off, but they did it anyway. And they've added a host of other liberal talkers. Every program has them, like that Juan Williams. He's another moron. Used to work for NPR, right? And there's a lot of them that fit into that category where they use them to what they think balance the conversation. And, at one point I thought, okay, maybe there's a measure to that that makes sense, this balanced conversation. And, people, I think if it's a fair conversation and if the left was playing fair, and if everything was fair now, I mean, any part of it was fair, I think we could have that conversation. But it's not. They're not. And the more you hang around this thing, the more you get to know politics, the more you realize it smells like a bad bat in Wuhan. Yeah? That's exactly. It smells bad. And that's the takeaway I get from that. This whole fear and balance notion, they've taken to the extreme with all of these leftist personalities in there who have these opinions and thought processes that are so un-American, like they're for illegal immigration, I mean, think about the things they're for. They support China. They support who? The World Health Organization over our own leaders and our own people, There's nothing fair or balanced about any of that. And these people, they're all for this big government machine. That's what they live for. And yet, America is a country of diversity and a country that loves diversity and is diverse. But not when diversity is going to eat our breakfast, lunch, and dinner, people, and kick our ass. There is a limit to what that means. At some point, we have to be Americans and say, you know what? We're not going to play your game anymore. And so the president looks at this. He calls out Chris Wallace and Fox News. And I don't watch Chris Wallace. I can't stand the program. I can't stand him. I don't watch any of those programs. They are just bad for your health, okay? But I know a lot of you do out there, and you bitch and complain about it because you throw them out on social media all the time. Oh, look over here, and you'll run the video clips to see if you can get likes and followers. Maybe you could get this, do the same thing, and maybe just put some truth out there and forget the Fox News, because all you're doing is building their brand by bitching about them, just like the celebrities when you put them out there. It's the same thing. You're giving them the publicity they desire. You're giving them oxygen in the room. Why do you do that? I mean, it's dumb. It's almost as dumb as the way President Trump refers to Nancy Pelosi in this tweet. And so Fox News had this whole fear and balance thing. They were thinking, okay, we're going to now rise above all of the chit chatter and the political thing. We're going to bring you the views, and we're going to let you decide. Because, you know, way back in the day with the Walter Cronkite thing, they used to, you know, there was talk, and even they were corrupted too, though, Dan Rather and all those people. But there was this sense that news was supposed to be fair and balanced to whatever degree that it was supposed to be. The problem there is they did everything in the closet. They were still corrupt. The socialists and communists were still running them. They were just in the closet. There is nothing in the closet today, people. I told you that on Viewpoint on the weekend. Nothing is in the closet. It's all out in the open now. For me now, the reason I can understand this is that when I got into this news kind of business, whatever you want to call it, making a difference in the world, I guess, you know. You know, you're either on the sidelines of the game or you're in the game. And that's what I've seen being in the corporate boardrooms, which actually is the problem why a lot of conservatives don't own a lot of these media outlets or not involved with the game, quite frankly, because they're on the sidelines. A lot of conservatives and a lot of conservatives with money are not involved in this here part of life. They just stay in their own circles. And that's part of the problem of why we're having these problems today. They're on the sidelines when it comes to real decision-making. And in these political circles, they don't see themselves as a voice. And therefore, and this is a real problem, because the left and the crazy people consider themselves a voice. So they own it all. They bought it all up, and they sit there in the game while we're on the sidelines bitching and complaining about the game, you see? So the game is being played, just football game, baseball game, whatever analogy you want to use. And we're on the sidelines because we don't want to get in the game for whatever reason. And the game has been played, so we sit there and we use the megaphone and we bitch and hoot and holler, complain, and we bitch and hoot and holler and complain as the game is played out there, see? And we don't like it. And then while the game is being played, they invest and they own the game. As I've told you countless times, they buy all the newspapers, all the television stations, all of the social media outlets. They run all the pieces of life, the universities, the professors, you know, the whole bit that we talk about all the time, people. Yeah, the whole thing. Why the conservatives are on the sidelines, you know, as one of my expressions, you know, with their hand on their ass, just, you know, whatever, as it all goes by. But somehow that's supposed to work. Somewhere it went wrong, people, I'll tell you. When I broke from corporate boardrooms and I got into this as a commentator, as a person, as a voice, as a person who wanted to play the game and make a difference, I didn't feel I would be able to make a difference in the business community in the way that I could in using the media in this community. I actually did consider running for public office as well. But like a Trump, I can be a little hard on the edges. I can be very much like a Trump. I get it. I figured they'd assassinate me as well. That's why I worry about the president all the time, by the way. I've never fit the mold. They call me all kinds of names. Unique, I refer to it as unique. They have a lot of other more colorful adjectives or names they would use, which are fine. I don't get sensitive about names, so they call me whatever they want. It's perfectly okay. Just the president, he gets called all kinds of things, I'm sure, as well. I'm not comparing myself in that way, but I'm telling you, I get the mentality of a CEO and what that means. And also wanting to get to the out loud truth. And somebody who passionately cares about this country. I have all those things in common with President Trump, and probably many of you do as well out there. I don't think that's a stretch, people. So when I started this whole thing, I had this idea in my mind that I was going to deliver kind of a, I didn't use the words fair and balanced, but kind of a fair and balanced approach. Diversity of opinion. In fact, if you go back to some of the earlier conversations I had in shows, we had a lot of liberals on the platform at that point. There were not a lot, but there were some. There were a myriad of them. And I'm not going to even say the names today. Just recently, I got a text from one and who I did not even answer. I probably should have answered her, but I didn't answer it because she's in this loony group of the others. And I just wasn't in the mood for it. I wasn't in the mood for her. I wasn't in the mood for her politics. And I wasn't in the mood to kiss her ass. You understand? So I didn't answer the text. And she had my, oh, how you doing? Want to make sure you're safe. Yeah, I'm safe, sister. Doing just fine. But I just wasn't in the mood. Okay? But I had a lot of those people on the platform. And we had them in different shows and things. But the thing is, I started in the reverse, and I realized we became a magnet for great conservative voices and for patriots who love America. And our shows and our columnists and our bloggers and our talk shows and podcasts, they all sort of, you know, we became a magnet for that. I mean, we didn't become a place where, you know, I'd never heard liberals saying, you know, oh man, I got to get a hold of that America Out Loud. I want to get on their site. I mean, that just doesn't happen. But there are a lot of conservative people trying to get in here. Every day we are bombarded here with messages to come on board. They want to writers or show host or something. There's a lot of people want to get involved, you know, but they're of that minded, you know, you kind of hang with like-minded people. There is a balance in life though. You want to have some of those other voices and know who the enemies are too. Keep in mind, that's another thing. We don't want to lose sight of people. We don't want to be ignorant and put our head in the sand because that'll come back to haunt us as well. So you see, so I've kind of reversed. I started out with this vision of America Out Loud that I was going to unite the country. It's, you know, this was back just before Trump was coming in because, you know, we're just 4 years old. So this is just before Trump was coming into the White House. This is back with Obama. And actually, I was a commentator on all the radio networks through the Obama administration. And that's where I got a lot of my legs, my sea legs for the media, because I did a radio show for one of the networks and I worked with a lot of different networks. Did that for a few years when I left the corporate boardrooms. And so when this shift happened, I thought, okay, we're going to create this really unique place and we're going to, you know, really have both voices and unite the country and do something nobody's done, because Obama was a very divisive president. You know, people give Trump a lot of hell today. They're always saying he's not uniting the country. You know, all of these like Kasich who think they know better, and they somehow think that, you know, that they're going to do a better job, that they can help unite the country. And that's kind of, you know, where I had this vision early on that I was going to do in my life personally, guys, or America Out Loud would become this place to unite. Now, listen, I still can see it that way if we're going to unite patriots or unite people who really love America. But there's a certain ideology out there, which is a socialist communist ideology. I am not interested in uniting. Now, this socialist communist group have sucked up the party of JFK. You see, they have eaten them up just like one of those bad bats in Wuhan market, you see. And so that Democrat Party is long gone. So you can't unite the socialist communist Democrat movement with me. It's not going to happen because I am not up for that game. So that's when it all changed for me. That's when it changed for America Out Loud, quite frankly. Probably when it changed for a lot of you out there. That's when the game became a little more rough and tumble. It was no longer just a casual partisan politic game. And we've seen that happen throughout the Obama administration. We've seen our rights being stripped away. We've seen the socializing of America. We've seen the big government build up an apparatus and the NSA after 9/11 on Bush, or the Patriot Act. All these things happened. Rights were removed, just like a lot of people are worried right now with the pandemic that we want our damn rights back. It's the same thing. That's why I've been putting messages out there about that, trying to edge people on. You know, because again, this socialist communist movement that is happening is not something we're willing to compromise on. It's that simple. We are not willing to unite any longer. And I don't think I ever thought I would say that to you. If you asked me that 10 years ago, I would have never agreed with that line. But when you know what you know, and you know what the opposing party is for, and you know what you're against, then you know you can't unite. That is really what became of why we've now reversed places with this Fox News. Although my initial intention was to unite the country, was to unite people, to bring all people to the table. I have language like that I use. It's in some of my language I've got from years back. It may still be hanging around, may not have even changed all of it, about, you know, uniting the people and bringing them to the table. See, I don't see that as a possibility anymore. It's just not an option, people. So now we've become this magnet for conservative voices, for patriotic voices. We're a constitutionalist organization, one that loves this country and loves the fact of what our founders created for us here, what the framers died for, what they worked for. We think that's worth celebrating, people. We think that's worth living for. And it damn well is worth dying for. It's worth dying for our kids, for our grandkids, for ourselves, for future generations. That's why I always say, I mean, here we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. That's what it is. And if we're going to preserve future generations, then we can't unite with those people because they have a different standard of goals that are very un-American. So we've now become really this new Fox News, what it would have been. I don't like the term Fox News, so forgive me a moment, but we've become what that would have been or what that was in the early days, maybe. We are a magnet for all of the things I just described to you. And we're not willing to unite and compromise on these other things. That's it. It is our way or the highway now. That's it. And we are willing to die for it. Does that make sense? Every God-loving American and Christian out there gets what I'm talking about. It's no coincidence, people, why evangelicals love Donald Trump, why the Christian community has embraced him, which has driven the socialist communists to the loony bin and back, because these are very much non-Christians. They happen to work for Satan. So now we know why the fight ahead is important. We also know why we're not willing to unite with socialists and communists, right? I mean, is that we're all clear on that. We also understand why now the president puts out there, where he mentions Chris Wallace and Fox News are on a bad path, watch. And that's exactly what he's talking about. See, they've now gone to this whole fear and balance, kumbaya, uniting to get the other side of the picture. Well, friends, that whole fear, balance, news, Walter Cronkite thing is long gone dead. It's ancient history. You can forget about it, okay? It's gone. So let's not even worry about it. Let's save America. Let's save the country we love. That's how we can be fair and balanced for our families and our lives and our livelihood. The hell with the rest of it. I mean, come on, wake up. What's so hard to figure out about that? Now we look again at the president's Twitter feed with love and affection for his voice, his megaphone, to the community of God-loving Christian patriots, Americans. You know, I mean, you can argue what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, presidential, not presidential. But people, those rules are out the window. When you try to tackle a president's ass consistently with every scandal known to man, and you continue to try to now pin ventilators and testing on the president because Russia, obstruction of justice, impeachment, or the colored jelly beans he likes didn't work for you, you know you've got a problem, you see? And that's where we find ourselves. So now you look at this, and you know they want to play by a certain set of rules. They want this president to play by a certain set of rules, right? What are the rules? Who creates the rules? The socialist communists create the rules? No, I think these are the new rules. I think it's a new game in life, and here it is. And the Twitter feed speaks. It is the megaphone to the American people. And you know what? The media has no one to blame but themselves. They've run themselves right out of their usefulness. And that's when they sit and complain, and they cry about this all the time. You know, they cry about it. They did a lot of crying over the past many years. Now, of course, they also go to the Twitter feed to get the latest and get the news. Let me tell you what. This Twitter feed is on everybody's fingertips. It is the one go-to source in the entire world for information and news and timeliness of what has happened in the world. Think about that a minute. Think about the power of that feed right there and why it's important that that feed is always active. Think about it in those terms, and now you see this is the voice and the megaphone and the communication to the American people and to the world at large is really what it is. So as you come down and you read the feed and you see all of the various, whether it's a retweet or whether it's a, like here, great credit must be given to FEMA, at FEMA, and all of those that are helping our states make it big. And again, that's a great tweet. Nothing wrong with that. That's a president that is rallying the troops. He's rallying and encouraging people during this pandemic that we can do this. This president is an optimistic cheerleader. He's outstanding in this way, I'll tell you. I mean, which again drives the socialist, communist, Democrats crazy, of course, because they're not optimistic people. And they're certainly not optimistic about America.